Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.
Join Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin for a new edition of the Capital Ideas Podcast. In unscripted conversations with investment professionals, you'll hear real stories about successes and lessons learned, informed by decades of investment experience. It's your look inside one of the world's largest asset managers. New episodes are available monthly. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Invest 30 minutes in an episode today. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
The FT.
Mortgages, historic low loan rates for low-risk borrowers. Currency funds, is foreign exchange suitable for private investors? And payment protection insurance, will the cold calls ever end? All this to come in this week's FT Money Show. I'm Elaine Moore, and I'll be bringing you the financial lowdown in downloadable form with my colleagues from FT Money, Lucy Warwick-Ching.
Hello.
Tanya Poley.
Hi.
And our special studio guest, Alice Ross, currency correspondent for the Financial Times.
Hello.
Let's start with the money news. This week, there's been a steady stream of downbeat news about the UK's housing market. The Bank of England says mortgage approvals fell to an 18-month low in June. And according to Nationwide Building Society, house prices fell in July for the fourth time in 5 months. But existing homeowners with a large amount of equity have some reason to be cheerful. Right now, they're being targeted by several lenders who have launched new loans at historic low rates. Tanya, just how low are these historic low rates?
Well, obviously, it was a subject we talked about in last week's FT Money podcast. We obviously had last week had Santander come out with another five-year fix at 2.99%, which followed HSBC's deal the week before. Now, this week, we've had Nationwide Building Society come out with a four-year fix, slightly shorter than the five-year fix, at a rate of 2.89%. So that's amazingly low. We've obviously never seen it this low. It does get to a point where you wonder whether it's going to go any lower, because we always talk about this, but at the moment, who knows? We also this week saw RBS, which is obviously the state-supported bank. They came out with a five-year fix at 2.95%, so obviously just slightly undercutting the deals launched by HSBC and Santander last week. And obviously, like you mentioned, they're all targeted at what the banks deem low-risk borrowers, those borrowers that have large deposits, about 40% or more.
So we talked about this last week. We're talking about it this week. Are we going to be talking about it next week? Is this going to keep on happening?
There's a good chance. I mean, obviously, yesterday, on Wednesday, we basically had the launch of the government's funding for lending scheme, which is basically aimed at encouraging banks and building societies to lend more to households and small businesses. So there's been a lot of talk about that this week in terms of, you know, where is that money going to be kind of targeted? And a lot of the brokers and experts I've been speaking to said that they're kind of concerned that they're still going to be targeted at those kind of low risk borrowers, if anything, because actually the banks can just use it to reduce their own books and capital costs rather than actually focusing on lending. So it'll be interesting to see, you know, what impact that actually has.
So let's talk about the funding for lending scheme. What's the idea behind this?
It literally is to encourage banks and building societies to lend more. So the banks that actually do lend more will be incentivized by actually having cheaper funding costs and what they can get on the wholesale markets. This is obviously hoped to kind of, you know, boost the economy by kind of bringing more lending in, encouraging more people to, you know, remortgage as well as buy homes. Obviously, then that will have an impact on the economy because, you know, there's a certain amount of costs involved when people move home. They'll be sort of boosting the economy in different sort of ways by building costs, you know, all that kind of stuff.
So is the idea that this is going to help the housing market? We've seen prices just seem to be coming down and down month by month. Is this supposed to unstick a stuck market?
I guess that's part of the aim. We'll have to see really what impact it's going to have. We obviously had the MPC minutes just now, just before we started recording this our money show. They've maintained bank rate at 0.5%. There was some, like, you know, speculation that maybe they would cut down to 0.25%. But I think they kind of actually want to see what impact the funding for lending scheme is going to have on the market first before they then start to think about maybe reducing base rates further.
And when we talk about house prices coming down, there's a couple of exceptions, aren't there? So where we live in London, I've been looking at house prices and they don't seem to be going anywhere at the moment.
Yeah, there still seems to be this, obviously, this big north-south divide. Obviously, the nationwide house price index this week did talk about sort of average house prices falling down across England and Wales, 0.9%. So mostly prices are falling across the UK, but obviously some of the greater falls are obviously in certain places like up north. London does seem to be in its kind of little world of its own at the moment.
So if you do have a large amount of equity or you do have a large deposit, this is a very good time to get a mortgage.
It is. And you know, we still don't know. Maybe some of the lenders will come out with cheaper first-time buyer deals. We did have Lloyds Banking Group earlier this week say they're pledging to lend £5 billion by the end of 2012 to first-time buyers. So hopefully we'll see some inroads there as well.
Thanks very much, Tanya. And to read more about low mortgage rates for low-risk borrowers, look out for Tanya's article in the Money section of this weekend's FT and online at ft.com/money. Still to come on the show, good news for anybody who's fed up with PPI claim calls. First, though, currencies. Betting on the movement of one currency against another, known as foreign exchange trading, has opened up to private investors in the last few years. There are now a number of currency funds that track the movement of currencies such as the euro, the US dollar, or sterling. But investors are being warned that many retail currency funds haven't lived up to expectations. Alice, as the FT's resident currency expert, what's your verdict on the funds?
Well, it's not looking that good. I had a look at the average currency fund performance over the past year, that's to the end of June, and it's about a 6% loss. And actually, they seem to be on a bit of a downward spiral, because the year before that, they made 5%. The year before that, they made 7%. And the year before that, they made 10%. So it's not really looking good. The only thing I would add there is that actually, when I looked at the IMA's sectors overall, they've got 35 sectors across all sorts of things, equities, bonds, and actually only 10 of those 35 sectors have made any money in the past year. So in fairness, currency funds are struggling along with most of the rest of the market at the moment.
So for investors who don't necessarily know what currency funds are, can you explain how they work? Are they different to your normal investment fund?
Yeah, I mean, generally they all work in different ways, but generally a currency fund isn't buying or selling any underlying asset, like an equity is actually buying a share in a company, or a bond fund is, you know, buying a local bond in a company or in a country. And currencies are basically just kind of buying and selling one currency against another. So that actually makes them very liquid, unlike issues that you have particularly with things like property funds, where, you know, all the investors want to get out of the fund and then it's really hard to actually sell what the fund owns. You don't have that issue at all in currency funds. So that is one advantage of them.
So why is it that some advisors would say that currency funds are not the right place for retail investors?
Well, it's an issue of trying to gauge the currency markets at the moment. And that's not just an issue for retail investors, but it's a massive issue for hedge fund investors, institutional investors as well, because the big issue with currency markets, and it has been the big issue for the past couple of years, is that you're getting all of this intervention from central banks. Basically, everyone wants a weak currency at the moment. And you've seen all of these central banks doing, you know, quantitative easing, monetary easing, flooding the market with their own currency in order to try and weaken it and then, you know, give their own economies a boost. But this is really unpredictable. So no one ever quite knows when a central bank is going to wade in and suddenly announce something, and then that makes it so hard. If you thought a currency was going in one nice direction, suddenly the central bank says, oh, actually, we're going to do this, and then it completely turns around. So a lot of currency managers, both for the retail market and the institutional market, have been totally foxed by this in recent years.
So if you are an investor and you are very convinced about the direction of a currency, is there any way of investing in it that you'd recommend? What about spread betting?
Yeah, I mean, basically, you could trust your money to one of these currency fund managers, bearing in mind that they're taking views on lots of different currencies, and bearing in mind that it's been quite hard for them generally to get that call right in the past year. Or if you feel really certain about one particular currency, you could buy a currency ETF. ETF Securities has been launching a number of these recently. And so you could basically say, I think sterling is going to rise against the dollar. And then you buy a particular ETF that just expresses that one view, that one currency thing. So you could do it that way.
So as the currency correspondent for the FT, can you tell us a little bit about what's been happening with certain currencies? So sterling, for example, what's been going on with sterling?
Well, sterling is a really interesting one at the moment, because basically, things are not looking good for the UK economy. You know, we haven't seen decent growth figures recently. The Bank of England has recently been doing even more monetary easing because it's so worried about the economy. But because we are in Europe and we're not the euro, a lot of people have been buying sterling because they see it as a haven in Europe. So that's kind of been keeping sterling, you know, oddly supported. It's actually at, what is it now? I think 2.5, 3-year highs against the euro. And it's not doing too badly against the US dollar either. So you've got that kind of weird, you know, conflicting reasons kind of affecting sterling. And where it will go from here, it's not sure, because it all depends on, as does almost everything else in the world right now, what happens in the eurozone.
Is there such a thing as a safe currency anymore?
Well, this is the thing as well. So you did have the ultra safe currencies were the Swiss franc and the US dollar and the Japanese yen. But all of those central banks are trying to weaken their currencies because everyone has tried to buy them in recent years because they're safe. And then the currencies get too strong. And then particularly in Switzerland, they are trying, I mean, the Swiss National Bank is really trying actively to weaken the franc at the moment.
So are there any currency funds out there that you would recommend or that you think are attractive right now? Or are they all much of a muchness?
I think I'm going to mention a few in my piece. So have a read of that in the weekend FT. But there's no standout fund at the moment. I mean, to be honest, they're all losing money right now.
Thanks very much, Alice. Warning words. To find out more about the returns offered by currency funds, look out for Alice's article in the money section of this weekend's FT and online at ft.com/money. And finally today, PPI. Last week, Lloyds Banking Group announced that it was setting aside another £700 million to compensate customers who claimed that they were missold loan insurance. This puts the bank's total provision for PPI at a staggering £4.3 billion. PPI is now shaping up to be the biggest consumer mis-selling scandal of all time, but banks are blaming the surge in complaints on claims management companies. Lucy, I feel like I'm getting several texts or phone calls every week from companies who claim they can get me back some PPI. And I know that I was never sold a PPI policy. So how many of these companies are there out there?
Well, there's literally hundreds, and loads of them have sprung up in the last couple of years just to really feed on this latest consumer scandal. And I think probably all of our listeners will have had some kind of contact from one of these firms, whether it's an unsolicited phone call or a text, or they could have had letters. And the problem is that I think lots of these companies are just sending these random texts out to anybody. They've got absolutely no information at the moment about who's had PPI. And what they're hoping will happen is that you will text back and say either stop, which tells them that you are a real person, or you'll tell them, yes, I've had PPI and I want to take out one of your services. But the problem is that people don't understand that if you do go through one of these claims management companies, that you will then have to give them, say, a quarter, in some cases up to half or even 75% of that compensation you could get back. So that's something to really be aware of. And actually, it's not very difficult for people to pursue these claims themselves.
But some of the consumer groups are saying that banks are not making it easy enough, and that when you go onto a bank's website, it's not very clear how you apply for PPI compensation. Do you think that's right?
I think to a certain extent that is right, and Which put out a statement earlier this week talking about this very fact. But there are websites that can help you do it. So Money Saving Expert does have something, and Which also. I mean, I think Which should be the first point of call. It's the Consumers Association, so it's kind of there to help consumers. And if you go onto their website, they have a kind of step-by-step guide. And I'm writing a box for this Saturday on exactly how to make a claim. So we just really want to make it as easy as possible so people don't go through one of these companies and pay the extra fee.
So talk me through it. How complicated is it?
The first thing to do is actually think about why you think you were missold. So if you didn't realise at the point of sale that you were taking this out, that's a reason. Other people that I've spoken to have said that they were told when they took out the loan that if they didn't take out PPI, then they wouldn't be able to get that product. My friends at a dinner party this week were all talking about it. And it actually surprised me that a lot of people did think that you had to take this out. So a lot of people that are very knowledgeable, that work in the city, they took out, say, credit cards, and at the point of sale, they were told you had to take out PPI. So they could actually be looking to claim back some of this money. And Which put out a release earlier saying that there's £10 billion that's been put aside by the bank. So you could be able to get some of this money yourself if you're eligible.
Not all of that's been paid out yet. It's only about half, isn't it, that's been paid out so far?
Yes.
So we talk in the office about these texts that we get. I got one this morning that said something about £3,661. Very specific. Tanya, you've had some as well.
It's been persistent, and I've even had phone calls to my home phone, and I've actually, got into conversations with them and actually said, look, what product was it that you claim I've been sort of missold? And they can't go into it, but they're actually very persistent on the phone call. They won't leave you alone. They don't want you to just put the phone down, that kind of stuff. So I actually didn't realise myself that saying stop, it was actually a bad thing.
Well, that's what these companies want. They want to know that there is a real person at the end of this number that they've randomly sent it to. So because even if you don't take out a service with them, if these companies find out details about you and then pass them on to another company, they get a referral fee, so they can get up to £800.
So do it yourself. Don't go to a claims management company. Thank you very much, Lucy. For more on claims management companies and cold calls and how best to claim missold PPI, make sure you read Lucy's article in the money section of your weekend's FT. That's all we have time for in this week's FT Money Show. Remember, you'll find all of these stories on our website, ft.com/money. You can follow our tweets at twitter.com/FT Money. And if you have a question that you'd like us to answer, just email us. The address is money@ft.com. Next week, we'll bring you another financial lowdown in downloadable form. But until then, it's goodbye from me, Tanya, Lucy and Alice Ross, currency correspondent of the Financial Times.
Goodbye.
For more downloads, go to ft.com/podcasts.
Did you know the Capital Ideas podcast now has a new monthly edition hosted by Capital Group CEO Mike Gitlin? Through the words and experiences of investment professionals, you'll discover who was their best mentor, what's a mistake they made that changed their approach, and how do they find their next great idea? Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. Published by American Funds Distributors, Inc.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has experienced teams who can craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex. Real wealth requires real solutions. Connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com.